Okay, I think we'll begin. First of all, welcome everyone. It's, as I mentioned previously, it really is an honor to be here and to share Torah with you, to teach and to learn from you. This is the last shiur in our series, but it really has been really an honor to be able to learn with all of you. So today's shiur is going to be focusing on David HaMelech. I think, oh, hold on. I think they sent me, I'm going to share the source sheet. I got a link to it. So let me share it in the chat box. Here is, okay. Here is the source sheet for those of you who want to see it on your own, I guess on your own computer. I'm going to share my screen so we will all see. Hold on a second, please. Okay. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about King David, about David HaMelech. Now, those of you who have been here throughout this series, we've been talking about the relationship between the Tanakh and Midrash. In the first shiur, we saw how Midrash fills in holes or gaps. Again, I don't mean gaps that there's something missing, chas v'shalom, in the Torah, but when we want to know some more information about what happened, the Midrash is there to fill that in. We also, in the second class, we talked about Rachel and her children, and we looked more throughout the span of different stories and how they're connected through Pshat and Midrash. Last week, we talked about, again, comparing different stories, and how Chazal and Midrash, either purposefully or maybe not purposefully, draw very interesting similarities between different characters that we meet in the Tanakh. Today, what I'd love to do with you is to, whereas in the first class, Midrash came to support or fill in for us some things that were missing. Today, what I want to look at is when Tanakh and the Midrash, specifically I brought for you Gemarot, but that's the source of Midrash, where Tanakh and Midrash are, I'll say contradictory. Obviously, we'll discuss that at the end, but let's say seemingly contradictory. And the question is going to be, of course, why, and what's going on. So that's the theme for today. We're going to talk about David HaMelech. We're going to compare David HaMelech in the Tanakh to David HaMelech in Chazal, and as I said, specifically in the Gemara. So we're going to talk about three aspects of David HaMelech's life. We're going to talk about David HaMelech, I'll say David the Melech, the coronation or the monarchy of David. We're going to talk about David, who is musical, his musicality. We're going to talk about David the warrior. And then at the end, we're going to talk about David in his death. So those are the four things we're going to look at today. Again, comparing the Tanakh's portrayal to the Midrash's portrayal. Okay, so let's begin. We're going to start. The first source is source number one in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. The first time we are introduced to David, we know that Shaul is the Melech, is the king. Shmuel, the Navi, is the one who coronated him. But as we know, Hashem decides to take away the monarchy from Shaul. And instead, he decides to make David the next king. But we're not sure exactly who the next king is. We have almost a Cinderella story, where Hashem tells Shmuel, right? Vayomer Shmuel el, sorry. First of all, Hashem tells Shmuel to go to Yishai's house, and to find, the next king. So Shmuel comes to Yishai's house. He says, bring me your children. Yishai brings his children. And, as in all good fairy tales, right? He tries on the glass slipper and it doesn't fit on anybody. And Shmuel is confused, right? Hashem said, go to Yishai's house. None of the people standing in front of him fit the bill. And we have in Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Shmuel el Yishai, Hatamu Hana'arim, right? Is that it? Like, I was told to come here and something is not right. Are these all of your children? Vayomer od shar hakatan vihine ro'e batzon, right? Oh, now that you mention it, there is one more. He's out with the sheep. Vayomer Shmuel el Yishai, Shilcha v'kachenu, ki lo nasov ad bo'o po. Right? Shmuel says, okay, I'll wait, bring him here, let's see who he is. It is a fascinating question as to why is David not brought in the first place. If Shmuel says to Yishai, bring me all your children, what's going on? So that's our question. The Gemara fills in a little bit. The Gemara tells us, in Masechet Pesachim, Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan. Here in Masechet Pesachim, the Gemara is interpreting the verses in Hallel, right in Tehillim, Perek, Kuf Yud Chet, 118, which we say in Hallel, we just said actually yesterday. So this is always, this is actually my husband's favorite Dvar Torah. It works for any Rosh Chodesh, any Chag that you're going to say Hallel. It's really a good back pocket Dvar Torah. But the Gemara tells us these last psukim of this psalm, what does it say? Odcha ki ani tani, right? The first verse is, well, it's not the first, but the first verse that we're going to discuss is, I give thanks to you for you have answered me. The Gemara says, who's talking? This is David HaMelech. And the Gemara explains that these four psukim are actually a response to the psukim that I just mentioned. Meaning, we have this scene. Shmuel is looking for the next king. There's nobody there that fits the bill. He tells Yishai to bring David. And we know that he brings David, and David is going to be the next king. And the Gemara says that these psukim are part of a conversation that everyone in this scene says. So the first sentence is, Odcha ki anitani, wow, Hashem, thank you for finally answering me. Even masu habonim haita l'rosh pina, right? The stone, which with the builders rejected, became the rosh pina, right? The cornerstone or the keystone on the top of an arch, right? The most important stone. Who said this? Yishai. Me'et Hashem haita zot, the brothers say, right? This moment is from God. These are all the brothers standing around and saying, Ze hayom asa Hashem amar Shmuel. So the question is, what is going on here? And here there is a wild midrash that gives us some background. It goes back to the story of Ruth and Boaz. If you remember, we actually mentioned this last week, that there was a question if Ruth could convert in the first place. If you remember, she's from Moab, and we know that the Torah tells us that a Moabite is not allowed to convert. In the time of Ruth and Boaz, the Sanhedrin, the judges ruled that when the verse says that a Moabite cannot be part of the Jewish people, it means the male, Moavi. Velo Moavia, right? A male Moabite cannot be part of the Jewish people, but a female Moabite can, right? And they ruled that Boaz could marry Ruth, and one could say they lived happily ever after, but But the bottom line is they have a child. That child has a child, and from there we have Yishai who has David. The Midrash here tells us that before David was born, this question came up again, and the sages were not sure if that initial ruling was correct or not. And then what came into question was Yishai's Jewish heritage. So Yishai says, well, I'm not sure if I'm Jewish. If I'm not really Jewish, I can't be with my Jewish wife. And the Midrash says that Yishai wants to have relations. So he propositions his non-Jewish servant. And he says to her, look, either I'm not Jewish so I can be with you, or I'm Jewish, and if I'm Jewish, I'm going to free you, and then you're Jewish. So it's all good, and we could be together. The servant does not feel very comfortable with this scenario, and she goes to Mrs. Yishai and tells her the whole story. And Mrs. Yishai says, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." As we have discussed in the past, of people changing their clothing, right? So Mrs. Yishai dresses up, or, you know, hides her face, and she's the one who sleeps with Yishai that night. The Midrash continues. If you don't believe it, it sounds like a soap opera, but this is in the Midrash. The Midrash says 3 months later, it turns out that Mrs. Yishai is pregnant, and Yishai says, I can't believe this. My wife is an adulteress because I know I didn't sleep with her. And definitely that child must be illegitimate. Why is this Midrash here? It explains what's going on in the beginning, meaning in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Yishai is told to bring all his children and doesn't bring David, right? If David is his child, why doesn't he bring him? And the Midrash seems to be implying that till that moment, Yishai assumed or didn't believe that David was really his son. And when Shmuel says, are you sure you don't have any other children? At that moment, Yishai realizes that his wife was telling the truth, and David really is his son. What's a proof to this? Now, again, this is Midrash. If you want to, again, with all Midrashim, you can take it at face value or not take it at face value. But there's definitely something here. I brought you in source 3 and 4, multiple psukim in Tehillim, where David expresses a distancing or a very complex relationship that he had with his family. Right, he says in source number 3, Perek Kafzayin of Tehillim, Ki avi v'imi azavuni v'Hashem ya'aspeni. Right, my father and mother abandoned me, and Hashem took me in. If we continue, source number 4 in Perek Samachtet of Tehillim, Muzar hayiti le'achai. Now, it's interesting, right? Muzar, like from the word mamzer, I was a stranger to my brother. V'nochri lebnei imi, right? And a stranger to the children of my mother, right? There's something going on here in the family dynamics. And that's what the Midrash is explaining. The Midrash is saying up until this point, he was really not seen as a child, right? If you look interestingly, source number 5, again, as we said, this is the source we read before. Yishai is told to bring his children. How many children does Yishai have? In source number 5, in Perek Tet Zayin of Shmuel Aleph, V'ya'aver Yishai Shivat Banav Lifnei Shmuel. Right? He brings his seven sons to Shmuel. A Perek later, right, which is after this scene, what does he say? V'David ben Ish Ephrati hazeh mi Beit Lechem Yehuda, u'shmo Yishai, right? There's a man from Beit Lechem, his name is Yishai, v'lo shmona banim, right? V'ish b'imei Shaul zaken baba anashim, right? All of a sudden, a parak leader, he has 8 sons. So I think it's fascinating to see how the Midrash weaves in the story of why is David not present originally, but only brought later. So now when we go back to these psukim, right, Odcha ki ani tani, right, David is saying, finally, Hashem, you've answered my prayers, right? What was David praying for, right? His father to accept him, his father to love him. Finally, his prayers are answered. Look what Yishai says. Even ma'asu habonim, right? The stone, right? But the child that was put away, that was rejected, haita l'rosh pina, right? Again, one could say that, you know, maybe, I don't know why he didn't like him so much. He was the youngest. But there's definitely a rejection or some sort of pushing away. And now he's brought as Rosh Pina, right? He's now going to be the king of Israel. Me'et Hashem haitazot, right? The children say, right, this is all from God, because really nobody knew what was going on. Zehayom asa Hashem, right? This is what Hashem has decreed for this day. So I think it's a fascinating description of David's coronation. We see that, he's coronated, for a very specific, reason. And he is, again, he's brought, he's right, raised up. He's anointed, right, in source number 7, on the second page, by Yomer Hashem, Kum Mashacheu Kize. Who, right? This is the king. Sorry, I didn't read the beginning of the pasuk. Vayishlach vayavi'ehu v'hu admoni im yafe enayim v'tov ro'i vayomer Hashem kum ashacheyo kizehu. Right? So they sent for David and he's brought. He is admoni, right? The Midrash plays a lot on understanding what does it mean that he's admoni. Is it like a complexion? Is it a red hair? But he's definitely has bright eyes. He's handsome. And Hashem says that he should be anointed, right? He is going to be the next king. And he is seen as being anointed. What's interesting is when we go to the Gemara and Masechet Yoma, David HaMelech is chosen for a very different reason. Again, we didn't go into the reasons he's chosen in the Tanakh, but definitely we see he's worthy. He is chosen by God as going to be the next king. I see somebody, sorry, somebody wanted the sources. I'll repost it for you. Sorry. Hold on. Okay. So we have the coronation ceremony, as you will, in the Tanakh. Let's go to the Gemara. In source number 8, we have the Gemara and Masechet Yoma. The Gemara asks, Mipnei ma lo nimshecha malchut beit Shaul, right? Why wasn't Shaul's monarchy continued through the generations? Now, we all know the answer to this. If you read Tanakh, it's very clear. Hashem tells us why he takes the monarchy away from Shaul. But interesting, if you read the Gemara, the reason that the Gemara gives, I'll read it in English. The Gemara says, it is because there was no flaw in his ancestry. So the Gemara says, right, the reason Shaul is not a successful king is because he was too perfect. What does that mean? Right, as Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak, one appoints a leader over the community only if he has a box full of creeping animals hanging behind him. We would call this skeletons in the closet, right? And literally the Gemara has it as a kupa shel shratzim tluya, right? Like kind of hanging over him. What does that mean? The Gemara seems to say the formula for the best type of leader is not somebody who is perfect, rather somebody who actually comes from humble beginnings. Not even humble beginnings, but maybe something even more sordid, right? Some sort of shratzim in some closet, right? In some box in the closet. And the Gemara actually, as we would ask, right? Why is this? Why is that important? It is so that if he exhibits a haughty attitude towards the community, one can say to him, turn and look behind you and be reminded of your humble roots. And I think it's fascinating. Again, this is not pshat in terms of we did not read any of this in the Tanakh, but the Gemara seems to say it's actually very important that David has some sort of complicated childhood. If you remember last week's shiur, when we talked about Ruth and we talked about Moshe, they both have complicated childhoods. And the Gemara seems to say that is the recipe for a successful leader. So we already have some sort of difference in opinion or difference in portraying who is the perfect leader. Again, in the Tanakh, it seems David is perfect because he's perfect. In the Gemara, he's perfect because he's actually not perfect. Okay, let's go on to the next section of the musicality of David. So we're going to look at source number 9. Source number 9, we have a description of David. And it says, this is actually right before the David and Goliath story. We're going to talk about that soon. But one of the attendants spoke up and said, right, I put in that and said, I have observed a son of Yishai from Beit Lechem who is skilled in music. If you remember, Shaul was having certain issues, fits, and music seemed to be a good balm, a good way for him to be calm. So the attendant says, there's somebody I heard about, the son of Yishai, who's skilled in music, but it says Yodea Nagen, he knows how to play. He's a stalwart fellow. He's Gibor Chayil, Ish Milchama. He is a warrior. And he's sensible in speech and handsome in appearance, and the Lord is with him. We're going to get to this pasuk. We're going to come back to it. We're going to focus now on the Yodea Nagen, the fact that he knows how to play an instrument. Now, if you think about it, why is it important that he plays music? What was his musicality important for in Perek Tetzayin of Sefer Shmuel? He's brought to the court to calm Shaul down. So his music is something very public, something that's in the court, right? The court musician. It's something that is used to soothe the king. Let's look at David's musical abilities from the lens of the Gemara. So source number 10 in Masechet Brachot, it says, Amar Rabbi Acha, David says as follows, midnight never passed me by in my sleep. It means that he never slept past midnight. The question is, what's he doing all night? Rabbi Zira said, until midnight, David would doze like a horse. Apparently, horses doze, but they don't sleep, says the Gemara. So he would lightly sleep. From midnight on, he would gain the strength of a lion. Rav Ashi said, until midnight, he would study Torah. And from midnight on, he would engage in songs and praise, right? Shirot v'tishbachot. We'll finish the Gemara, I think very famously. Rabbi Shimon Chasida said, a kinor, right, a lyre, hung over David's bed. And once midnight arrived, the northern midnight wind would come, right? The winds would change exactly at midnight. And the wind would come and cause the lyre to play on its own, right? It was essentially his alarm clock. And David would immediately rise from his bed and study Torah until the first rays of dawn. So it seems to be a machloket, as many things are in the Gemara, what David does all night. But in any event, part of his night is spent With Shirot v'Tishbachot. So what would you characterize the musicality of David in the Gemara? He uses his music in a very private way, in a very spiritual way, right? This is not David, the court, right? The court violinist or harpist, however you understand kinor. But this is David, the person, right? Again, I think that's going to be very important. The private David, who's sitting in his chamber and playing his kinnor in order to connect to Hashem, right? He's using his musicality, right? He's writing Sefer Tehillim, perhaps, right? He's davening to Hashem, connecting to Hashem through his music. And I think this is a very different portrayal than the one that we see in the Tanakh. Okay, let's put that aside. We'll come back. Let's go to David the warrior. If you remember, again, very famously, I think it's we don't have to go through all the psukim, but we do know the famous, first of all, throughout Sefer Shmuel Aleph, David is seen as a warrior, so much so that he's not allowed, one reason he's not allowed to build the Beit HaMikdash is that he has too much blood on his hands. We know that he is, right, the champion against Goliath. So we know that he's definitely a warrior. We saw in the pasuk before when the Na'ar describes who David is, he's a gibor chayil, an ish milchama. Okay, so that's very clear pshat. He is a general. He is a fighter. He's definitely seen his share of blood and battle. So that is source number 11. I brought you a few psukim from the scene right before or during the David and Goliath encounter. Let's look at David the warrior in the Midrash, in the Gemara, in Masechet Sanhedrin, source number 12. I think this is just a fascinating example of the Gemara, you know, kind of in reinterpreting or interpreting in a completely different way the pshat, the regular understanding of the psukim. So it says, again, here's our pasuk. Vayan echad mehana'arim, vayomer hini ra'iti ben li shai bet halachmi, yodea nagen. Again, this is the verse that we saw before. There's this son of Yishai. He knows how to play music, right? Yodea nagen. V'gibor chayel. He's very, he's a warrior. V'ish milchama, and a man of war. V'navon davar. He's very smart. V'ish to'ar. He's very handsome. V'hashem imo. Okay, that's the pshat, right? The simple understanding. Again, not simple, but the regular understanding of the pasuk. Let's look at how the Gemara interprets this. Rabbi Yehuda says that Rav says, Doeg ha'edomi, who is one of Shaul's servants, stated this entire verse only as a malicious speech. Meaning, when we read these psukim, they sound great, right? If you had to describe a great guy, right? I have a great guy for you. No, 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 no. This is a great description. The Gemara says, no, 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 no. This is Doeg. We know that Doeg is not a good guy. And basically, all of this is Lashon Hara, right? Literally, it says, Ela b'Lashon Hara, right? He's saying this in a negative way. How is this negative? How does the Gemara say? Ah, Yodea Nagen. What does it mean? He knows how to play. Right? He knows how to ask complex questions of Torah, right? He knows how to, right? Nagen, like to play. So he knows how to lishol, right? He knows how to ask a lot of complex questions. He's a warrior. What does that mean? A fine warrior. He knows how to answer questions raised with regard to matters of Torah, right? He's a man of war. That means that he knows how to negotiate his way in the battle to understand Torah. Everyone's seeing a theme here, right? He is handsome. He's one who displays understanding in the facets of halacha. You wanted a warrior on the battlefield? This guy, he's a warrior in the Beit Midrash. You don't want him. He's this, you know, nerdy guy who sits and learns all day. That's not the guy you want, right? He can understand one thing from another. Hashem is with him. It means that they rule like him. It's completely a different understanding of what we understood, right? So what's the point here? What's going on, right? The Gemara seems to be interpreting this idea of being a warrior in a completely different way, right? Nowadays, we say, you know, I mean, the teens nowadays use the word slay. It means like you do something really good. So literally this was like the pshat is he slayed people on the battlefield. And the Gemara is saying he slays in the Beit Midrash. Right. You want to stay away from him if you want to, you know, like win a halachic argument because he is, you know, he's going to beat you. It's a fascinating description of David, because instead of having David, even if we say the little kid who, you know, beats Goliath, here it's a little kid or a man who is sitting in the Beit Midrash all day and learning. Yes, someone just mentioned David's deathbed. We're going to get to David's death story in 1 minute. But there's definitely a discrepancy here. Let's keep going. The last sources that we're going to do, the last section, is going to be the death of David in the Navi versus the death story in the Gemara. So if you're familiar in Sefer Melachim, we have the pre-death story in Perek Aleph, and then we have Perek Bet. Right? Perek Bet is what's called the Tzava'a, the commanding that David does to Shlomo. It's very meticulous. David knows that he's going to die and he wants to put his affairs in order. And literally when you read the psukim, it's so organized. He says, Shlomo, you're going to be the next king. These are the things I need you to do. X, Y, Z. I brought you a few of the psukim, right? When David's life was drawing to a close, he instructed his son Shlomo as follows. I'm going the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man. Right? Chazakta v'hayita la'ish. Right? I think a beautiful way to boost his son. Right? I have faith in you. You can do it. Be a man. I think in a positive way. He says, keep the charge of the Lord your God, walk in his ways and follow his laws, his commandments, his rules and his admonitions as recorded in the teachings of Moshe, in order that you may succeed in whatever you undertake and wherever you turn. Right. He sets up a beautiful way of how do you know what's good? Follow the Torah. Do mitzvot. Listen to Hashem's Torah because that's going to be your guide. And then he says, right, and of course he gives him all the things that he wants him to do. And then the Lord will fulfill the promise that he made concerning me. If your descendants are scrupulous in their conduct and walk before me faithfully with all their heart and soul, your line on the throne of Israel shall never end. Right. And David shares with Shlomo this promise that Hashem gave him that his monarchy will be a dynasty, meaning this is right. The Davidic dynasty is going to continue forever. And that's really just a beautiful way to bless his son. And the final pasuk, it says, right, Vayishkav David im avotav veikaver be'ir David. Right. So David slept with his fathers, right, which means he died and he was buried in the city of David. And it is a very neat perek, right? David knows he's going to die. David sets his affairs in order and David dies. Beautiful, tied in a knot, put it on the shelf. Again, like I think a very satisfying end to obviously a very complicated person, but it's a satisfying end. Let's go to the Gemara. The Gemara has a completely different perspective on David's last days. I didn't bring you the beginning of the story, but basically David asks Hashem, Hashem says, you can ask me anything. And David asks, can you tell me when I'm going to die? And Hashem is like, yeah, I'm not telling you when you're going to die, but I will tell you that you will die on a Shabbat. And therefore, I brought you here, Shabbat Daf Lamed Amud Bet. So what does David do with this information? Every Shabbat, he would sit and learn all day long to protect himself from the angel of death. Right? There's an understanding that if you are busy or you have words of Torah on your lips, the Melech HaMavet, the angel of death, cannot take you. So David decides every Shabbos, for 25 hours, he's going to learn Torah, and therefore he's going to cheat death. On that day on which the angel of death was supposed to put his soul to rest, the day on which David was supposed to die, the angel of death stood before him and was unable to overcome him because his mouth did not pause from study, right? The Melech HaMavet comes and says, what am I going to do? This guy keeps learning and he doesn't stop and he doesn't know what to do. Of course, the angel of death is pretty smart. David's also pretty smart, but the angel of death said, what shall I do to him? So the Gemara tells us, right, David had a garden, a bustana. He had a garden behind his house. And the angel of death came, climbed and started shaking the tree, right? So he shook the branches. David went out to see. And of course, here he continues learning. It doesn't say, but that's the assumption. He goes out to sea, but he's continuing to learn. And as he climbed the stair broke beneath him, right? So he's going to see what's going on, and the stair breaks as he's walking. And we all know that when we're startled, right? We take a breath in. That was a little much. Okay, we take a breath in. He was startled. He was silent. And that was dangerous. Because as soon as he was silent, right, he stopped learning Torah for that moment and he died. And that is the end of David in the Gemara. So what I want to think about with you for the last few minutes is what's going on here? Again, to summarize, in the Tanakh, we have a very clear description of who David is. David is definitely someone who was rejected in his childhood, again, for whatever reason, but is raised up and becomes the king of Israel. He is a mighty warrior. He's a musician that plays for the court. He's someone who in the public is a very, fierce person, in terms of, on the battlefield, in his court, in politics, and he dies a very kingly death. If we go to the Gemara, we have a very different description. We have the description of a very complicated childhood. We have someone who has these skeletons in the closet. We have someone who spends every night while everyone is sleeping, singing and praying to Hashem, right, through his music, through his poetry and his songs. And we have someone who is extremely learned, right? Someone who is paskening halacha, someone who sits in judgment, someone who doesn't stop in his constant quest for Torah and his commitment to mitzvot. And the question is, why? Why do Chazal feel the need to give us a very different perspective of David HaMelech? And I want to suggest, this is actually a shir I wrote with my husband. My husband is the Tanakh person and I'm more the Gemara person. What we discussed together, I think that Chazal wanted us to be able to connect to David, the person, the individual, and not only David HaMelech. I think it's a beautiful idea to look at David HaMelech as someone that we could aspire to, but I don't know about you, but I could never be the king of Israel. So how do I connect to David HaMelech? And I think Chazal give us a different perspective. They give us a very personal, private individual, a person who's consistent in their learning, a person who's consistent in their devotion to Hashem, in their prayer, in their commitment to halacha. And that's someone I really could try to aspire to. And I think that that's very intentional. I think it's meant to inspire all of us, that even David HaMelech, the Gibor, right? The person who defeated Goliath is the person who says Tehillim in the middle of the night, right? Is the person who sits in the Beit Midrash and learns, you know, some Chumash. It's someone who I could really connect to. I think another way of looking at it is in the Tanakh, we really are exposed to all the highs and lows and the drama of David's life, right? The very high ups and the very low downs of David's life. And I think what Chazal are trying to do is to give us some consistency, right? If Chazal say every Shabbat David was learning, right? Every night he was saying Tehillim, right? That gives me some consistency, right? Even if David is being chased by Absalom, even if he's running away from Shaul, at night David is singing Shirot v'Tishbachot. And I think that's really a beautiful image that we can connect to. And I think, again, I think we are meant to be inspired by the national leader that David was, right? The David HaMelech, who is going to be giving us the Moshiach, meaning Beit David, the Malchut of David, that is eternal. But on the other hand, I think that Chazal want to give us that personal level, that personal side of David that I think each and every one of us can relate to. And I just want to finish up, I think beautifully, definitely in Israel, we see this very vividly. Baruch Hashem, we were blessed with many boys. And when the boys go into the army, they have a tekes hashba'ah, a swearing-in ceremony. And in that swearing-in ceremony, every soldier is given a gun and a Tanakh. And I really feel that that's the symbol of David HaMelech. I think that David HaMelech symbolizes this, right, the warrior, the gun, the protector of Israel. But the Tanakh, right, the person, the individual who is committed to halacha, to Torah, to mitzvot, and to connecting to Hashem. So I think that really the merging of those two ideas, right, the two sides of the coin that the Tanakh give us and the Gemara give us are really meant to inspire all of us. So I'd love to open it up. If you have questions, comments, I would love to hear your thoughts. Go ahead. I know you have thoughts.
I don't understand the business with a king or as a leader should not be perfect or have a perfect background. But we know that a Navi has to be perfect. That's why Muhammad couldn't be a Navi in our religion. You can't go from some person that wasn't really good and become a Navi. Even if you become good. So why the difference?
It's a fascinating question. I think the question is, how do you define perfect? I think here what it's trying to say is I think the Gemara is trying to say you need to come from humble background, because otherwise it might lead to ga'ava, right? To too much, right? Thinking that you're so amazing, that might lead to too much power. And I think definitely if you brought up Nevi'im, I think the Nevi'im as well, many came from, not all, but many came from very humble backgrounds, poverty, complications. Even if they didn't come from humble backgrounds, their lives were very complicated, thrown into jail, not believed. I think there is something about your environment or your background helping you with humility. Right, we believe that leaders should be humble and not too proud, so haughty. So I think that's the idea. Any other thoughts, questions, comments?
I thought that Shaul in the beginning was extremely humble. He didn't take over as a leader and show the proper, get the proper respect from people. And that, Shmuel didn't like. So
it is true. Shaul starts very humble. But at the end, not. At the end, not.
I have a question.
So, yes.
I was aware that David lived for 70 years because Adam Arishon gave him part of his life. So in that case, wouldn't David know that when he was going to be in his 70th year, that was when he was going to die? And so he spent maybe that year of his life more intensely learning Torah and singing Shvachot, etc.
It's an excellent question. I think you're assuming that David read the Midrash that he would have 70 years. I don't think he read that Midrash. I don't think he knew. I don't think he knew when he was going to die. I mean, definitely from the story, we see a decline, maybe in his health, in his, he definitely sees it coming, but I don't think, you know, he had on his calendar, I have 70 years, and counting. So, I at least from the pshat and definitely from the Gemara, it seems that this is something he was doing all his life. Meaning every night he was learning Torah and singing praises to God. Every Shabbos he was learning Torah, lest God take him on Shabbat. But, you know, I don't know.
Tamara?
Yes.
First of all, it's Rosie Friedman, Davida's mom. This was delightful. And I always considered when they picked David, it was a Cinderella story. I always said that. Last online, you know, no glass slipper. Yes,
exactly.
You and to Gita and Yassi.
Thank you so much.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm a little troubled by a lot of this.
Okay.
Because as we know that Midrash has A and elsewhere you have not A. So I am troubled by Torah being so narrowly defined. Because we know that, let's say, with the Asara Harugim, they were studying Torah when they died, you know, Shem Echad and all that. Mm-hmm. So the angel of death does have control over them even when they're studying. But the idea that if you're honest in the marketplace, that that's not a form of Torah and that you should be equally protected as if you're studying text, aside from the anachronisms. What was Torah study in David's time? Was there anything like that? Sure. You know, even if there was Torah Shebaal Peh, did anybody know about it? So I'm troubled by that. I'm troubled by the fact that, you know, we could have also said that David's house and Shaul's house could have united if Michal had had kids and was fertile. And so you could have combined one and the other. There was that possibility. All right, you know, so that was, for whatever reason, that didn't come to fruition.
True.
But the idea of Torah study protecting you, so I can study Torah and cross the street without checking what I'm doing, you know, and cars will automatically stop. You know, come on. The Malach HaMavet, you know, and we know that from the Gemara, the Malach HaMavet makes mistakes, right? With the hairdresser versus the other one, that they took the wrong one. Whatever that means, that God has, that there's chance in the world on some level.
Yes. Okay. I definitely, I hear you. Please do not walk blindfolded while learning Torah across the street. Please do not. That's not my message here. I agree with you. The question is, how do we understand this text? I think that Chazal are trying to give us a message. I think their message is, and again, I think we do see this in the Pshat of Tanakh, but I think that they're taking it to an extreme for a purpose. And here I think the purpose was to show that David HaMelech, with all of his, right, wars that he waged, again, L'Tovah, like all the wars that he waged, he was still committed to Torah. He was still committed to God. However, we understand that. Of course, in the time of the Gemara, being committed to God means sitting and learning in the Beit Midrash. As you mentioned, the Gemara in many other places has a different interpretation of what does it mean to be committed to God, whether it's mitzvot ben adam l'chaveiro. There's so many different
But you're messages. You're also ignoring the obvious, which is just like the Chazal created the term Moshe Rabbeinu to connect them. Maybe this has nothing to do with about David, but it's to say that our tradition that we are telling you is ancient, is so ancient that even King David studied Torah just while they were doing radical things at the end of the Second Temple period. It's more about the rabbis connecting them to ancient stories than what it actually reflects about the King David.
I think that's an interesting perspective, meaning you're saying it's self-serving to the rabbis. I would challenge that. I think that I would say it the other way. I think what they're saying is, again, everyone in their own interpretation, but I think what they're saying is when you read the Tanakh and you read about the greatest king, again, that could be arguable, but David HaMelech starts, right, Hashem says, you're going to have this dynasty, and I'm not taking it away from you, and Moshiach is coming from David. There needs to be something special about David, and I think what Chazal are trying to say is, as great a leader as he was in the political national sphere, David HaMelech was committed in his religious commitment. Again, how you want to explain it, I think, is up to interpretation.
Yes, but you're also ignoring what he did in his last days. He gave his son Solomon a hit list. Kill these guys. That's not 20 years earlier when he was a, what my aunt would call a Goel Nefesh. He's doing that on his deathbed. He's saying, you know, kill these guys. And that's
again,
at the end of his life.
Again, I think someone could argue that geopolitical reasons, right? This was the best way to go about it. I'm definitely not a politics person, so I can't ask it. I see Chaim's raising his hand, so I'll just say that again, this is my perspective. This is my interpretation, but I think that it's meant to. I think it's Chazal's way of having us be able to connect to David as a political leader and as a national leader and as a committed religious person. And how you understand it, I think, is up to you. But I think I see Chaim's raising his hand. Yes.
These are wonderful.
David HaMelech.
There are two Chaim. Sorry.
Okay. These are
Chaim
wonderful.
Chaim Kranzler.
These are wonderful sources, but I come to a different conclusion from your interpretation of these sources, and that is it's a way for Chazal to grapple with the imperfections of David and how could he become the Mashiach ben David, or that the Davidic dynasty comes through him. So on the one hand, the Gemara in Yoma says, well, you need to have a king to have imperfections. It's a wonderful way of explaining his complex and rather complicated, difficult character, as others have said. And frankly, also about, you know, turning him into a Rosh Yeshiva and into a great Lamdan and always be, you know, I mean, that was the rabbinic ideal of what he should be. So that explains at least how he's our, how shall we say, our future, not just our past, as imperfect as he rather was. But the truth of the matter is it's hagiography. And it's a way of explaining how, you know, why did he become the one who had the dynasty come after him? So we have to fill in the blanks there.
Correct. Beautiful. Thank you so much. Okay, Chaim Fruchter, yes.
Okay. Everybody is dealing with him, all his politics. But it's a big surprise that whatever David HaMelech was the last child, and whatever the Midrash says about how he came about, it's a big surprise that when it comes to deal with Amnon and Tamar, he is totally silent, complete. When it comes to the story with Avshalom, it's completely different. He should not be there. He just gets straight out when Yoav ben Tsruya is coming in front of his face. There is a lot to say about that. But yeah. Again, he said, Chatati Lashem Chatati. Just saying that, recognizing that sincerely, I think that's what makes him above Saul. Thank you.
Nachon. Beautiful. I agree with you. I think what you said, Chaim, supports Chaim's statement that he's a very complex character. I don't want to take on all of David. I think there's a lot here, but I agree. He's a very complex character. I see Alana asked about the David and Bathsheba story, right? Sure. Tanakh versus Gemara. It's huge. I don't want to get into that now. I think that's another whole shiur. But I agree that David is very complicated and yet is the progenitor of Melech HaMashiach. So I think we have to try to understand, and I liked how you brought in the idea of Chatati. He is not perfect, but he recognizes that he is not perfect. And I think that that's the beginning. Definitely not the whole story, but definitely the beginning. So I want to thank all of you. Really, this was wonderful to share Torah with all of you. And I want to wish you all a Shabbat Shalom and looking forward to continued learning in the future.
Thank you. Toda.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Yishar kocher. Thank you.
Thank you.